Enforcers have swarmed the Arclight in the aftermath of the odd goings-on during the Night of Gilded Birds. The scream came from a woman who, upon regaining consciousness, seems to have no memory of what happened, and whose skin is covered in pulsing tattoos. Mama Amaretta converses with her daughter, Yarrow, Arthur, and an Arcadia professor about these unusual uses of crystal, while JJ prompts an enforcer chase. And when distraction is needed, Zion takes a leap of love.
A new day dawns. The closing bartender at the circus flips the number back to zero on the Since We've Seen the Sun sign as she watches the hint of an actual sunrise over the horizon, pinking the sky. A couple hours later, once she's in bed after the long night, the rest of the city begins to stir. Mama, you awake in the bed in your home, and you notice that it is sunny for the first time in a long time. And as you come more into consciousness, you can also hear some movement from downstairs in your kitchen.
Mama kind of gets up and rubs her eyes and then does a little stretch, and there's probably like some pops of joints here and there. She grabs her cane and slowly gets up, then goes and redoes her bun for the day, fixing some of the strands to frame her face a bit better, and just washes her face. Adds like just a simple amount of like just rouge and like a nice like just like a dark red like nice lipstick and lines her lips and stuff. And then she just goes and puts on her clothes for the day. Steps downstairs.
As you come down the stairs, Yarrow is up. She seems to have been up for quite a while. You can see past the kitchen table into the kitchen where it looks like half a pot of coffee already drank. She's wrapped in a wool-lined robe to keep out the night chill. But as you come down, she doesn't seem to hear you on the stairs as you descend. And when you do, you notice that some of your notes from the night before are spread out on the table in front of her.
Amaretta's gonna kind of look over the notes and be like, "Hey, honey, why didn't you wake me up earlier?"
She jumps in the seat when you speak, scrambling to cover the work and then realizing if any damage was done, it had already been done. "Oh, Mama, I'm sorry. Please don't be mad."
"Why would I be mad?"
"I kind of went through your things, but I woke up in the middle of the night and I just had a thought. Do you want a cup of coffee?"
I'd appreciate that. So what's going on?"
She pushes the chair out and walks around the table into the kitchen to grab you a mug and pour you a cup. And as she does so, she says, "I had a hard time sleeping anyway last night, but I woke up and there's just something in the back of my head that I couldn't quiet. And so I came down here and didn't really know what it was still. I just kind of sat, stared at nothing until it hit me. The runes here." And she spreads the notes even further open, flips some pages to where you had marked down the runes that you had seen on Annie's arm. The runes that you remember seeing graffitied on some of the buildings in Cypher. "So these runes, while unfamiliar, I mean, truly, I can't find an exact correlation anywhere, but what I did find is a pattern. Nothing that I can conclusively decipher, but a pattern nonetheless. Mama, I think it's a new alchemy language."
I don't know much about alchemy, so you gotta tell me if that's, like, even a possibility normally."
Okay, yeah, of course. Yarrow has just this bright look of intrigue about her, and her words are rushing together as she tries to explain to you this excitement in what she's found. "Okay, so in this study of alchemy, runes are used to denote different materials, but they are also used in building equations for how these materials would function if joined. These runes follow, if not the same, then a similar type of equational pattern. Someone is trying to create a new language for something that no one has ever done before. The problem is I don't know the cipher for this language to figure out what."
"Huh. Geez, that's a hell of a revelation you just got on there.
Sometimes you really just do need a good night's sleep.
Or a cup of coffee.
Or that.
I mean, thank you, Yara. This is, I think, a real helpful connection you just made. And frankly, I didn't have the knowledge to make that kind of connection there. But what does that have to do with the crystals, then?
There are runic notations for known crystals. None of the runes here match up with any known crystal. So that's where I've hit my dead end.
The crystals we saw before and the string and the paint? Seen anything like that before, or is that...
I've seen and I know of crystals in, like, their full just mind form, but... And I've, of course, seen them in certain technologies, but I've never seen someone make a fine harp string out of a crystal. I would assume that material would be way too hard to do something like that with. So if indeed that was devised from this runic language, then that is either... I think there are two options. One, somebody has created a different name for a known rune, a known crystal, or somebody has found a new one.
Do you think that it's possible through alchemy that you can reshape objects, kind of like, you know, turning those crystals into strings or something?
Yes and no. The normal crystals are too hard to be bent in that fashion, so when you see crystals used in other technologies or in weapons like that, they're usually either completely dissolved into like a liquid form of themselves, or they are a refined version of the actual thing. I have never dealt with something of an in-between nature, a crystal that is flexible.
Someone has to be real smart to be able to do something like this. And have some connections to be able to put it into, like, paints or instruments.
I mean, the only connection there is art, but that's very vague. Instrument makers don't design or formulate paints.
I'm not sure it's just art. I think it might be attacking young people, specifically.
She gets a bit of a reserved look on her face, remembering the moment from the night before. Yeah.
Because the established painter's painting was fine, and the materials that were provided to these young artists who lost their opportunities was specifically targeted towards them. Those memories only triggered towards young people. The person that's been spraying around that graffiti was young.
That's true. Annie was young.
Right. I'm not sure if that's the main note, but it's certainly a pattern worth at least looking at.
I agree. I don't know if there is a crystal out there that can so pointedly attack or harm or influence like that, then the people behind it have targeted attacks. Because you can make a sword or a weapon with any crystal out there for any means, and that can harm anyone. But if somebody is specifically looking at younger people, then there has to be a different reason for it.
Part of me is suspicious that it might be a group I ran into before, but I don't have enough evidence to point the finger at them.
What group would this be?
It was some, I don't know, weird cult folk. They managed to infiltrate Velvet Roses, and they had a member there.
I'm sure the Velvet Rose is not too happy about that.
Oh, no, I don't think they were too happy about that, no. The masks were white and gold in color, and I think they called themselves the Faceless.
She gets into a thinking position, racking her brain for any information, if she's read anything of the sort. There's a lot of history of different groups wearing masks of some sort, but I don't know of any called that.
Must be a pretty underground group then, or a pretty new one, or both of those things.
When did you run into this group exactly?
Well, you know, Miss Weatherby?
Oh, that case.
They were responsible for stealing whatever invention.
So they're either, like, a month old, or they've decided now was the time to show their faces.
I would assume with the kind of resources they had, now was the time. If you can infiltrate a group like the Velvet Roses, you gotta have something on hand.
What changed then, though? There had to be an inciting factor.
Maybe money? I don't know. Maybe a new leader of some kind?
I think there are very few people who use your back door. There is one that you haven't seen in a bit. It's not weird for you not to have seen this man. He stays to the shadows. He only comes around when he thinks he needs to, or when he thinks you might need him. So when you kind of look out to where the back door is through the pane of glass, you can see the tall, lean figure, kind of abstracted through the glass, of Veliko.
Amaretta will let him in, but she's going to wear an expression of slight confusion and surprise, because he doesn't come around often, and when he does, it's always with something.
He swiftly slinks inside and waits for you to shut the door.
I know this is a bit weird. I don't usually come to see you in the daytime.
Well, usually you tend to show up a bit earlier. You want some coffee or anything?
I would love some coffee, actually. That would be great.
She'll go and fix him a cup of coffee the way he likes it, because they've been friends for a while, so she would know what his preference for a cup of coffee is.
You've been friends with Veliko since pretty much you've married Dimitri and old friends. Sips the cup of coffee. Yarrow says, Uncle V, you have incredible timing.
Yes, so last night was interesting. An attack on the arc light.
Yeah, well, I guess news spreads around fast.
Oh, does it spread fast or does it spread to the right places?
I suppose it's the same thing.
Well, I've heard some rumors about places you've been that I've been surprised to hear. People you've talked to. Situations you've been in. It's been enough years, Amaretta. I can deduce your train of thought here. So I think I have something for you.
Okay, well, certainly got my ear.
There's been some aggressive discussions throughout the city. There's been, people are starting to get nervous. There's no easy way to put this, I suppose, but there's been more people disappearing recently than have been reported. And knowing where our interests lie, I think it's important for you to know that. I thought it was a fluke at first, but some of them have been coming back. You met one last night, didn't you? They took her down to the department afterwards. Annie. Apparently, that girl's been missing for months. Just didn't show up to work one day. No one knew where she was. Last night, some of her co-workers at the Arc Light said that was the first time they'd seen her. She'd dropped off the face of the earth and just showed up again.
And even though she's not gonna say it out loud, there's both a hope and a horror at the fact that Dimitri might show up again. And she's not sure what to do about that situation. That might mean there's a lot more people in this together than we thought.
I had the same thought.
Someone's trying to keep people quiet out there.
Another interesting fact about it is that in the few cases that been able to dredge up, either these people are in no state to talk, or they don't have anything to say. You ask them about what happened, and they don't have any memory of it. And of course people could be lying, but if every single one of them says it, even if two people say it, something to think about.
Veliko has this very well-kept short pushed up at the front into kind of like spikes. And he kind of runs his hand through it and adjusts these round, like, yellow-tinted glasses he has on his face. And this might not be a thread that leads anywhere, I don't know.
I'm happy to take any threads I get.
There's another thing, and I don't know if it's connected. There was no cultural, social connection between these people. But that's why I don't know if this would have anything to do with it, but there's been a new drug on the scene. That's causing a bit of a stir. Because it's crystal cut. I haven't been able to get my hands on it yet. People have become a little bit wary of me lately. I've been asking a lot of questions. But it's been around now for the good part of this last year, if not longer. I don't know for sure.
Is it possible that most of these folks you talk to are kind of, you would say, younger in age?
It was the kid we all know of who's in the clinic currently still, unconscious. Annie's fairly young in her 20s. There was Asa. He was a little bit younger than 20. And then there was, Neum. And Neum, was... I think they were on the later end of their 20s. I didn't get exact ages. I'm just going off of looks. But that kid in the hospital, I think he's also younger than 20.
Yeah, no, that's real interesting. And she's gonna kind of exchange a look with her daughter, because now they have more evidence that it's youth being attacked.
Uncle V, do you know if any of the people that you talked to had weird, strange symbols on their body? Oh, well, come to think of it, yeah. I mean, I didn't ask anybody to strip down or anything, but Asa had, some weird black ink markings on his temple.
Interesting. Any of it kind of look a bit like this? And she's gonna lift up her notebook that she has the sketch page on and show it.
He spreads these long, thin fingers over the page, like... I couldn't, like, point out what ones for certain or anything, but they look alike, definitely.
Amaretta's just gonna kind of, like, rub her chin as she looks over everything with this new given information, and it's kind of helping her hone in on the motive, and she needs to figure out who would target these people. It's probably the Faceless again, but she needs that evidence before she can just be like, bam, it's these guys.
Veliko goes and sets his mug on the kitchen table next to all these papers. All right, well, I gotta get out of here before I'm missed. I don't want to bring any unwanted attention to you. If you're really looking to the end of this, you're gonna have enough on yourself more on yourself than you'll need. You don't need all of this. So if you need me, I'll be around like always. But I don't want to keep coming around. I don't want to draw unwanted attention to you.
Right, well, you know, if you need a place to wallow, I got some spots.
Actually, that might be nice. Again, I've been asking a lot of questions, and some people are getting not too happy with me.
Amaretta will give Filico a few spots, because also, you know, some people come probably for, like, the equivalent of witness protection, where, like, they're really scared to talk about what's going on, and they need a place to hide, so Amaretta likely has places she knows of or places set up for those kinds of situations, so Veliko would likely know where to go, as this probably isn't the first time she's given him a space like that.
He puts his hand on your shoulder as he's going to leave, and he looks you in the eye and he says, this is stirring some stuff up, okay? I'm not done looking.
Right, well, be careful when you start poking around, okay?
Of course. He takes his leave. Yarrow has sat down in a chair during this and leans back a little bit and watches it happen. I never know whether to be scared of that man or very excited to see him.
I mean, both is usually a pretty good sentiment given the news he usually drops on us.
You're right about that.
Now we got a lead of where to look, which is drug dealers, and I doubt they're gonna give me a second glance.
Mama, do you have the phone number, the address of that young man I spoke, Arthur? We had talked about some things last night, and I know he said he was willing to help, despite, well, but I would like to maybe discuss some of this with him. If he actually worked with Viola Weatherby, of all people, he might have some more insight than I do on the actual interworkings of alchemy and hacking.
I can get you guys in connection. I mean, y'all already met, so you can just tell them who it is.
Yeah, a phone number or an address, either one. And I think that would be very helpful in maybe further figuring this puzzle out.
Right. Figuring out the puzzle. And Amaretta's gonna squint slightly, like, quietly assessing, like, is this more than just, I am helping you with the case? Is this an excuse to see someone also? That's what she's trying to figure out right now.
I think that you see in Yara's face complete academic interest, but Your daughter has never necessarily been one to be super romantically forward. Every time that has happened, it has always started like this.
It's the morning, and JJ enters her own apartment through the front door in the clothes that she was wearing the day before. She looks very tired, but also a little on edge. Gets in and just, like, slams the door behind her, leans up against it, and then slowly slides down and just rubs her eyes.
You realize that you haven't seen your apartment with the light of the sun in it for a wildly long time. And right now, through the window streams the early morning light, gentle sun.
Oh, we're in a deep one, JJ. And I think she'll get up, she'll rifle through what she may or may not have in her cabinets, looking for something to make, not a meal, but a morning snack out of, and finds probably some crackers and maybe a can of soup or something she can throw on. There's definitely dead milk in the fridge that she has to throw out.
As the soup boils on the stove, JJ goes over to a small radio on the counter and turns it on.
I think she thinks back to last night, going back to Zion's place, sharing a few more kisses, sharing a few drinks, and then falling asleep together on the couch as they got just so exhausted. And when she woke up, looking up at Zion, who's already awake, and just kind of smiling down at her and feeling ice start, like, from the bottom of her feet and slowly work up to her stomach as she realizes the decision that was made so quickly, and puts on a smile. That was honestly a really great night. I have to go back to my place and shower and get ready. We have a whole new case that we just got, and I have to explain your
come
mom.
Come here. And you are looking down at the long, tall, muscular body of Zion, still in the clothes from the night before, though they're rumpled a little bit from sleeping on the couch. His eyes are hazy with sleep, almost fully closed, but can hear you and, like, turns his head as he says this, and a hand comes up to motion you closer to him.
And she'll lean in closer, smiling.
He continues to use his finger to motion you down until you're close enough where he can, like, very quickly leave a peck on your lips and says, "It's too early to talk, okay? I'm glad you are here."
You are right. It is too early to talk. I had a great time. And she'll lean down and, like, give him another peck and then hop up, put on her boots.
"Hey." And as you kind of moved away from the couch, you watch as he, like, kind of crawls his long body up more onto it. "Get home safe."
"You too. I..." "Uh-huh." And she'll run away.
Come back out of this reverie of the morning, seeing that the soup has started to bubble on the stove.
"Oh, shit, shit, shit." And she'll, like, jump up and runs over, turns the heat off on the stove, and, like, tries to stir it, and then, like, drops the spoon into the, like, pot making the soup, and has to get, like, a different spoon, is trying to, like, fish it out, and, like, grabs it, burns her hand a little, and then finally, like, pours it into a bowl, and somehow, by that time, it's, like, not hot anymore. Sits down with some lukewarm soup to just kind of, like, "Everything is fine. Everything is fine. I am happy. And there's nothing more to that."
Do you think, during your evening with Zion, that possibly your feelings bar would have moved up?
Yeah. And then I would also argue that it probably also increased from this morning.
Jo is sitting, sleeping at her kitchen table. There are notes and various gadgetry, no food, no drink on her kitchen table, just work. And Jo wakes up with a start when the phone rings, a small piece of paper stuck to her cheek that she has to peel off, still in last night's clothes, but quite rumpled. Half of her short hair is like sticking straight up. I think she is maybe just looking at a lot of like any plans that she has accumulated over the years that like aren't her own, or anything that ever had like a place to utilize a crystal as like a power source, just doing like general research. And also any gadgets that she has on hand that produce sound. I think she would just kind of be like studying how they work, taking them apart and putting them back together. And she kind of stumbles over to the phone. hello. Hello.
Hey, Jo. Just wanted to make sure you were all right. Got back home last night. That's good. We just noticed we got a bit separated towards the end there.
Yes. I'm fine. I just, should I come in? Do you need me? Has there been any, new information?
We definitely got some, maybe some new developments from, a friend that dropped by, gave some help, but, I mean, if you're not feeling too well, you don't have to drop by in the morning. You can rest if you need.
Oh, no, I'm, no, I don't need rest. I'm totally fine. I will be there in just a moment.
All right, well, I'll fix you a cup when you come to the office, so you got a little pick-me-up when you arrive.
Thanks, Mama.
Of course. I'll see you in a bit.
See you.
And as you are walking up to the building, coming from the opposite direction, you see JJ walking up to the building.
Just based on leg length, Jo arrives a little sooner, uses her key, opens the building. So by the time she gets it open, JJ is there. And she just kind of holds the door open with like one arm over JJ's head. Morning.
Good morning. I am here. And then two stairs at a time. She has to get in the office and get changed before anyone notices what she is wearing.
As JJ kind of runs away from her, does like this sidelong glance, and as she shuts the door and heads up after her, just says, "Nice jacket."
Thanks. Zion left it in my car.
Right. In your car. Well, I hope you had a brilliant evening. And with the most like shit-eating grin, manages to pass her on the stairs.
You push the door open and pretty quiet in here. As you push the door open, you hear a lovely little meow as Boomy comes to meet you at the door.
All clothing things are forgotten. JJ goes down to, "I'm so sorry I didn't come home last night. I'm so sorry." And like, he is like, he was fed. He is absolutely fine. Oh, baby.
In your arms and getting pets and preening and all of that love. And you see that the door to Mama's office is like open, but like halfway. But you can hear papers and rustling inside of it.
She's gonna kind of look up from her papers, and you'll see she has like a little bit of those like kind of like chain glasses you have, because you know she's getting older, she has to get those reading glasses. And so she kind of peers over them a little bit and goes, "Oh, y'all are here." Well, she stands up from the desk and hands a drink to both JJ and Jo.
Half a cup of hot chocolate and half a cup of coffee, and then like a bunch of like whole milk.
Joe's is a black coffee and a blueberry muffin.
Chocolate croissant.
So Mom's gonna kind of have, like, stuff and notes that she's taken from the night before. And, like, revised this morning and talked about with her daughter, Vivico. Kind of all spread out. She's gonna go, "Okay, so I have my suspicions as to who I think is the responsible party for such things, but until I get evidence, I can't say in good conscience it's the same thing. For now, I know for a fact that they're using the same symbols we saw down in Cypher. They're definitely targeting young people. They're using the crystals somehow and messing with them in some type of way, so they gotta have some connections to somebody who can, you know, do something with that, and that's someone real smart with some really fancy technology. Something that I was told by a friend, which is mighty helpful, and I'm gonna need y'all's help for this, because it ain't gonna work out well for me trying to get this, but I'm gonna need y'all to try and contact some drug dealers about some new drug on the street if we think it's containing some of these crystals. And I need to get a sample of that so we can try and send it to the professor and see if that can get broken down and analyzed in a way and we can figure out who's dealing it, who's distributing it, because maybe if we find the distributors for this new little thing, we might be able to find the people responsible for the attack on Arclight.
Well, that should be easy. I mean, half the people at the circus on any given day are drug dealers or consumers.
I can start on the paperwork for the case.
Yeah, I mean, we're probably going to need to get that invoice set up, just to at least guarantee we get compensated for our work.
I need to go...
Of course, I'm not implying that those in the upper city ain't going to pay their dues. It's just better to be safe than sorry.
They try not to all the time, so it's completely understandable. I just also have dinner to go have with... person. I don't know why I'm being coy about it. It's my friend, and you know my friend, and I actually have to pee really bad. I've just remembered. Look over there. And JJ, like, reaches under the couch. No one looks. Definitely. Grabs, like, a clear container full of clothes and, like, drags it into the bathroom and closes the door.
I don't know why she feels the need to be so secretive about that, but I'm gonna just let her do it. Honestly, she'd be saving a lot more money if she just stopped paying rent for an apartment she doesn't use.
Yeah, you know, paying for an apartment that you're barely in is not exactly a smart business move. But, you know, we have to let JJ do her thing.
She'll kind of drum her fingers across the desk for a moment and then take a sip of her morning latte and just kind of goes, so, notice you got separated from us last night. Is there anything I need to be briefed on about that, or is it personal business?
Honestly, it was mostly personal, but I believe we are on the right track. The Velvet Roses are on edge.
It's not surprising, given that somebody freaking infiltrated their group. Usually tends to make groups like that real on edge. They don't know who to trust, they don't know who's a part of what now. They don't know how high up it goes.
Well, they definitely don't trust Jack.
I ain't none too fond of Jackie, but, you know, Jackie needs a place to lay low for a while. I got some spots, and you can let them know about that.
Thank you. I will let Jack know the next time I see her. I think that she's able to deliver the business in a business-like fashion, but I think that when she says, the next time I'll see her, some hurt comes across her face. Quickly covered with a bright smile of confidence. You can tell from, like, a little shaking of her leg that she already is wanting to get a move on from this conversation.
By the way, I mean, might be best to go on separate routes with JJ for this. My daughter Yara was planning on meeting up with Arthur to discuss it.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I don't know if you wanted to prioritize getting those runes investigated or trying to pick up on getting some of the samples that might be helpful for us.
I think it would be best if I arrive at the circus at a better time. It's a little early for most of the burnouts. So I think I'll go there this evening, but is Yara already on her way?
Well, I mean, you can call her up and let her know that you're interested in joining up, but I'm sure that y'all can probably get that done rather quickly. She has Arthur's contact information. You got Arthur's contact information.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate y'all helping out.
Jo grabs her mug of coffee and walks over to the phone in the other room. While Mama probably doesn't make out the exact words, she can hear a general excitement and eagerness. within just a few moments, Joe's already hanging up the phone and mobilized and ready to go. And so when she comes back in, she downs the rest of her coffee and takes a huge bite of her muffin.
Right. Actually, we're going to go now. So, you can just tell JJ...
At this moment, JJ walks out of the bathroom.
That I'm leaving. So, see you later. I'm sure.
Will we?
And let me know if there are any developments.
Good luck and be safe.
Always.
Rolls her eyes and then looks up at Mama and is like holding the like clear container and just like drops it and is like, oh, I totally forgot to brush my teeth. And then takes a step back into the bathroom and closes the door.
Mama Amaretta goes to the clinic in Cypher. The one where... Before Rose Weatherby ever showed up, another case was wrapped. It wasn't a hard one until the end. For weeks, the storefronts in the bridge had been vandalized, glass streaked with glue and paper in weird distortions. Lamplight Investigative Services tracked the trail, found the culprit, a young individual who lived in Cypher. Very swiftly, it became obvious that he was addled. Mumbling, stringing together sentences that didn't make sense, eyes jumping, unable to focus. It was as if he couldn't hear you. And it was no one's fault, really. He didn't jump, none of you pushed him. But he fell. Slipped off the grating platform that ran alongside the upper floor of an old trolley factory. And while the shopkeepers were glad they didn't have to keep stripping their windows each morning, no one in Cypher was happy that the young man was laying unconscious in the clinic. And he has been laying unconscious in the clinic for months now, his family keeping vigil at his bedside hoping. That's not the first case that ended with a hang-up. That probably is the first case that ended up in a hang-up as consequential as that. Mama Amaretta has heard of now a couple other people disappearing, or a couple other people addled, a couple other people having these runes associated with them. And so she goes to the clinic in Cypher, and she goes to find Antonio, her brother. And when you come in, the staff recognizes you. And the nurse at the front desk says, he's no better off than he was.
Well, sorry to hear that. Might have found something a bit related to him. I don't know if it's going to create any improvements, though, but better than nothing.
If you need to go see him, you'll be more than welcome. His family is praying for people to come visit. And she kind of gestures down a hallway towards a room for you to go to. You walk down to a room on the side of a hallway that is all by itself. The name Veruni stands out on the placard outside, indicating whose room this is. And when you walk in, you see truly what you saw the first time you walked in here. You see Veruni unconscious, seemingly asleep, on a bed, and the only difference in the room is that his parents are in here right now, and they are sitting to the side. It almost looks like, in a sense, that they're trying to bide their time, like they're here because their son is here. They can't do anything about it. There's nothing they can do to stop whatever is happening, or to heal it, or to make it end. So his father has a book in hand, and his mother is on the phone talking to somebody.
Amaretta's gonna quietly walk in, Kanan, a plate of baked goods in hand. She's gonna quietly set it by the nightside table and just kinda give a look over at the kid. She's no doctor, but she vaguely understands vitals, probably more than the average person, thanks to Antonio and the nature of her job now that just demanded that knowledge. Seeing that he's not improved, but also ideally not gotten worse?
They're fine. In the sense that He should not be unconscious. They're fine to the point that no one knows why he has not woken up yet. Crawling across his skin, like you saw with Annie, these ink-like runes. On Annie, they were coming up from her wrists and her arms. For Varuni, they're coming up his neck over his chin. They come up to like halfway up his cheeks, and then it almost looks like it's a spool of thread that like goes back to the beginning and starts again.
All right, I might take out her notebook she has to like capture the images of this rune as well, just in case there's any differences. Mm-hmm. It's just best to get as many samples as we can, because if it is a ciphered language, we're gonna need as many symbols as possible.
There's a knock on the door as you're kind of in the middle of writing this down. Antonio, who you unfortunately haven't seen in a while simply because of his work schedule. They told me you were here.
Yeah, wanted to check in on him and learn something that might be related to, well, what's going on.
You do know that this wasn't your fault, right?
You kind of see the conflict on Amaretta's face, where, like, logically, she completely understands this was, of course, not at all her fault. But, like, emotionally, there's that clinging guilt of being like, there's something I could have done differently, though. Maybe I could have, like, held on to him, like, the whole time or something. Like, just thinking about things she should have done to ensure maybe that this wouldn't have happened to him. Because she sees the parents are kind of stuck grieving in this unknown state of her kid, and she definitely knows what it feels like to have your loved ones in a state of limbo.
Good, because it's not. No one could have foreseen this. I've never seen anything like it. And the fact that others now come in with the same thing, Amaretta, it's... I don't know how to help these people.
Amaretta's gonna kind of, like, look to Varuni's parents and just say, if y'all want any, baked goods to help, you know, sweeten the sadness, you got some over there. And she's just gonna lightly gesture and maybe, like, kind of pull her brother just outside the clinic so they can talk more privately, because this is something maybe the parents don't want to necessarily hear.
You're right, he's probably broken protocol a little bit by saying that in front of these individuals.
I get it, and I appreciate it.
It's been a tense couple weeks here.
Yeah, I heard y'all have been busy, to say the least, with what's been coming out, but she's gonna lower her voice a bit. She's gonna be like, I'm starting to see a bit of a pattern between these things. It's all young folks, right, that have been coming in with those strange runes?
Yeah, but other than that, there's no physical connection.
You test them for drugs?
One of the first things we do.
Well, there's a new drug on the street. I'm gonna try and get a sample of it. Because apparently that has some interesting things that are connected to something else I'm looking at right now. It's got these weird magic, crystals inside of it.
If you can get me a sample, I'll test it.
I mean, might be worth looking into if that's what all these folks are suffering from. You might be able to find an antidote.
We're reaching limit here. In these cases, that we don't know what's happening.
Right.
We have to find a solution. Because otherwise, and he kind of stares off into the distance for a moment. Otherwise, Amaretta, I have to start choosing who lives and who dies.
If there's something I can do to make sure you don't have to make those decisions, I'm going to try real hard. It's not easy, and I don't envy your position right now, but everyone's grateful, I'm sure, for doing what you can for these folks. She'll grab his hand and squeeze it. And you can help yourself maybe to some of those baked goods, too. Or I can get you a separate plate if you want.
I haven't had dinner. I'll grab one on my way out.
You need to eat more.
I need to save people more.
Well, you can't do that in an empty stomach.
Pardon the interruption, but here's another show we think you'd like.
Five GMs in a Trench Coat is back. And this time with Season 3, as GM Tanlin uses Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition for her story.
Imagine the stench of fear, of sweat, and of blood. Cold stone beneath your palm as you feel your way down an impossibly dark and endless hallway. Here there's as much fear as there is isolation, and as much hopelessness as there is violence, or at least fantasies of it.
Join Callan Omoris Caldwell, played by Adam Gonzalez, Reen Sato, played by Kim Siyuki, Two and a Half Horns, played by Jesse Espinoza, and Auditor Madison, played by Tanner Sherlock, as they navigate the Kingdom of Miltaunt and the horrors that await them.
So you guys hear, like, an alarm bell, like, fucking, all the doors go, shadunk, and then you also hear, like, coming from the ceiling.
Five Gems in a Trench Coat is a TTRPG actual play podcast where five friends take turns weaving stories through the tabletop game of their choice each season. With new episodes out every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts.
We are in Silent Hill. It was just a joke before!
You can find the links to this show in the description box below.
The mists roll across the valley over the bodies of hundreds of dead as a large figure rises above the mountains, too large to be anything mortal.
Enter Pocket Bard, immersive audio made easy. With an ever-expanding music library, Pocket Bard has made soundscaping for your TTRPG needs seamless and so very simple. The easy-to-use app provides you with scenes that include ambiance, weather patterns, quick and easy sound effects, as well as backing music with just a touch of a button. Transitioning from town to a long travel journey? Don't worry. A large selection of the music and soundscapes adjust to your adventures, transitioning seamlessly into the next scene. You'll unlock a wide variety of music for all genres of play so that you can weave an incredible tapestry that'll make playing at your table even more memorable than it already was. Check out Pocket Bard at www.pocketbard.app or head to your nearest app store on iOS or Android to access the magic right now.
Have you been wanting to bring your home games to the next level? Maybe you're looking for the perfect holiday gift for the TTRPG-loving person in your life. Well, during the Hero Forge Black Friday sale, you can get savings as big as the stories you tell. Maybe you're a DM and you want to gift something physical to your players of their player characters in your campaign. Or maybe you're a player and you want to give the gift of an NPC in the form of a miniature. You can save 20% on physical miniatures and accessories, such as their iconic color plastic miniatures, their new, super cute custom acrylic keychains, or their 3D printed custom dice, as well as 50% on digital miniatures and STL files. The sale ends December 1st, so don't delay! Restrictions apply. Head to heroforge.com/sale for more details.
Your next favorite game is on My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Ho, 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 and welcome to My First Dungeon.
From Sad Space Cowboys.
Kamari takes out a lighter from their pocket and goes, this bar's next.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let's go.
To death metal Viking cats.
Hello Kitty, you see Melody Tuffington flying through the air, jacked as shit, massive legs, to horny snowmen?
The sad part is that Joshua never gave Frosty a penis.
No.
And everything in between.
It was a dark and stormy night.
We've got something for everyone.
You're a special Gertrude girl. In a special Gertrude world, happy birthday, happy birthday! I'm not a skeleton.
Learn the game, then hear it in action.
That's Snake Eyes minus two, that's a zero.
Snake Eyes, that means that we have our very first plot twist. Anytime somebody rolls doubles, we get a plot twist.
So grab some headphones
and get lost in a story with us.
I'll be honest, I don't know all the rules of it. We'll kind of figure that out as we go. But do you want to just play? I've got some great stories to tell you.
And remember,
if you're having fun, you're already doing it right.
Oh, fuck!
So Arthur lives in Nova, not like directly by the university, but in the same general area of the university. When you talk to Yarrow about meeting up and joining forces, she mentions the Q&A cafe. You pull out front and you notice that the outside of it looks super grungy and gives you more the vibes of like a neighborhood dive bar than like a cafe coffee shop place.
Jo takes her helmet off and locks up her bike and kind of slightly side-eyes everyone on the sidewalk outside of this place.
Not that everybody in Nova is super rich, but there's 100% a difference in culture between Nova and Cypher that is apparent even in just the way people carry themselves.
For a second, her eyes like need to adjust because it's not like it's bright daylight outside, but it's so dim that Jo actively wonders if they have like painted over any windows to make sure that there would be no light let in. Huh. Edgy.
Yarrow is already there. She's chosen a booth. She has on just this like frock and skirt that just scream like academia and education. But they themselves are not like actually like rich in material. It almost feels like you're looking at somebody putting on a front to fit in the place that you are in, though nobody else in this cafe seems to be of an academic nature. A little vest buttoned up to the top, has two books spread out in front of her. There are two cups of something on the table as well.
Jo looks at her outfit and compares it with everyone around the room and kind of just does like a laugh through her nose. But it is charming that she's trying to be like blend in with the students. And so when she approaches, she can't help but crack a joke. Oh, did you just come from study group?
When Yarrow looks up at this joke, what does she see Jo looking like?
Jo is wearing high-waisted, baggy-as-hell black leather pants with, like, a bunch of pockets and chains and things dangling off of them. The sort of pants that, like, when she walks, she, like, makes a sound. And a dark blue button-up as well, but not buttoned to the top, of course. Her rings. And in her deep pockets, there is a dagger, just in case. She always has a little weapon on her. But overall, kind of a subdued look for Jo. This was her way of blending in.
You don't seem to have the same qualms.
I tend to stand out wherever I go.
A very quick gesture of, like, sit across from me happens.
Jo obliges.
So,
I do wonder if we can trust Arthur.
Oh.
Did your mother tell you how we met him?
No, what I know is he was a wonderful party guest last night. We had a wonderful conversation. He brought up a lot of interesting theories and ideas, and I learned this morning that he may be in possession of crystals. And I thought maybe he would be able to help me divulge all of this. And she kind of gestures at the notes in front of her, which you can see, even upside down, are runes. You recognize them as that type of thing. But I will say, like, looking at them, you can't make sense of them either. You're just as at a loss to this type of runic language as she is.
Joe kind of, like, takes her fingers and, like, spins the papers so that they are facing the right way towards herself. Well, we did meet him under rather unfortunate circumstances. He, at least for me, was a suspect in our last case. He was cleared. He didn't have anything to do with it, but he's smart, you know? He's connected to a specific world, and I simply wonder, if these crystals have so much power, why does he have so many of them? However, if you enjoyed him as a party guest, I do wonder, did you flirt with him? Will that be useful for us?
I guess roll, figure out a person, so 2d6 plus your wit.
I got a 12.
Well, I met Arthur last evening. That was the first time we've ever met. He seems to be a lovely individual. He seems very intelligent, has a lot of professorial inclinations.
Right. Well, you yourself are quite intelligent.
Oh, indeed. I'm a little bit older than him. Have been through the same rigorous training, but I find him fascinating, and an academic stance, and I understand that your and my brother's friends have a conflicting relationship currently.
Well, I simply wanted to know if we had another tool to use at our disposal, but that's quite all right. Although, I suppose it matters more if he likes you than if you care for him.
I am not in the business of manipulation. I like Arthur as a person, and I have no idea what his thoughts are to me. I simply thought he would be a good source of information for us in this job, as you and my mother would call it.
Joe kind of leans back and studies Yarrow and rubs her face for a moment. I apologize. I was never trying to put anything on you or even accuse you of such machinations. I do hope you don't think ill of me for thinking this way. I simply know what is useful, and a pretty face is often useful in an investigation.
Yara leans forward so that, like, her elbows are on the table. One hand comes up to rest her chin upon as she looks at you, moves her hand over, grabs her little cup, and says, "That one's for you. I hope it's to your liking." And takes a sip of it and puts it down.
What is it?
It looks to be just like black coffee. You see that there is like sugar and milk on the table, but in the coffee cup itself, it looks to be just black coffee.
Joe looks at it, sort of matches Yarrow's stance, and says, "Perfect. You do seem to know some things about me."
And as Yarrow sets the cup back down and kind of pulls back, "I hope you don't take this in the wrong way."
"I'll try not to."
"Would be greatly appreciated on my part and that of the others involved. I don't think ill of you. At all. But I have been..." And there's a soft smirk that comes across her face. "I have been abridged of you."
Joe looks at her with a very quizzical but entertained look, and a slow grin forms across her face. And as she leans in, she sort of takes on this like conspiratorial tone.
And might I ask who exactly was keeping you up to date on me?
Yarrow doesn't lean in, but she does not shy away from you. She simply just responds, well, my mother, who knows you the best, I would suppose, from what I've learned.
Of course, yes. Your mother does see me most often, but sometimes at my worst.
Joe, I'm not here to judge. I simply think that you should know that I know of you, if we're going to work together. It's better for you to understand that I'm aware of...
my reputation?
Sure, but, I'm most likely immune to your tricks.
I see. Joe has this grin on her face, and if there's something that Joe loves, it's a challenge. And so she kind of tilts her head to the side and reaches over and brushes some stray hair out of Yarrow's face and tucks it slowly behind her ear. Darling, I haven't used any tricks on you yet.
I do need you to roll me to entice.
It's a 7.
You easily see that there's a flush to her skin. But despite that, she fights past it. She doesn't move completely out, but she, like, moves a little bit so it's harder for you to reach. I think that I don't know him. But he's the best source of information. That's what I think.
Right.
Arthur seems to be the currently best source of information about Crystal. I am a historian, so I know a lot about a lot, but there are very few things that I know in depth about. I guess it would just hope that he would deem it possible to share with us the things that he knows, but from what I understood from him last night, I don't see why he wouldn't.
Joe sees that Yara, like, slightly pulls away from her. And while she's assured that Yara is on her side, she's curious about her now in a human way. Well, good. I would hope that we can have each other's backs. But while we are here, I do wonder... how do you feel about what your mother told you about me?
I suppose that's a question I have to ask back to you, which is, do you really want to know?
I think I should, if we are going to continue this partnership.
All right. I feel like I know somebody that I don't actually know. I feel like I'm now in a position to assume things about you that may not be true, which is why I try not to. And I don't mean that in a wrong way, I just mean like, I feel like that there are questions I could ask you that I already know the answer to, so why would I ask them of you? Why would I waste both of our times? I don't think... what do you think my mother told me?
I wish I had a stronger drink for this. I can't imagine it was anything good. She probably told you that I barely sleep, barely eat, spend most of my time overworked.
Well, thank you for telling me these things. But no. My mother is not one to divulge your deepest, darkest secrets. The things she told me about you were related to work. Not to your personal life. To an extent, stories become figments of imaginations for people who don't know. And so I suppose I've created stories about you. May or may not be true. But my mother is not a gossip. So I know what I need to know. And none of it paints you in a light that I would not want to be involved with.
And how would you feel if we truly got to know each other?
I suppose that would depend.
On?
What you mean? I just think it's odd to try to get to know someone that I probably know more about them than they know about me.
That's true. I don't know much about you. I know that you're quite intelligent, very pretty, well composed, curious.
The blush turns into a deeper shade of red.
All of these very positive traits. So perhaps we can be friends? I don't have many.
I don't think there was any question on that.
That I don't have any friends?
No, that we could be friends.
Good. However, perhaps we should establish what I should not do. How could I get you to like me? And I'll be sure to do exactly the opposite.
You want me to hate you, then?
Joe winks. Might be better if you're at least mildly annoyed with me. That tends to be the default for everyone in my life.
Well, sorry about that, because I don't hate you currently.
If I wanted to keep you away from me, what would I need to do?
And she is very off-put immediately, like scrambling to find an answer for you. I do know a lot. I've studied a lot. So I am not very happy when people second guess my knowledge. But Joe, don't change.
Couldn't if I tried. Joe does kind of avert her gaze for a moment and leans back, and her body language just shifts slightly to be more closed off. Right, so, do we have an appointment with Arthur?
I have an address.
Great, perfect. We shall go knock on his door then.
Please, let's. And throws down a couple of tezzas as a tip to and follows you out of Q&A Cafe. Joe kind of leads the way to where they originally met Arthur in his apartment. And you walk up the stairs. The door is locked, of course, so the door opens with Arthur on the other side, who is wearing that, like, orangish gold robe that he was wearing the first time you had seen him. But this time he, like, actively tries to close it and goes, "Oh, yeah, okay, didn't know you were coming. Cool. One second." And leaves the door open for you guys to walk in as he kind of runs back into a different room.
Joe strides into the room and kind of calls out after him. "Good to know you haven't changed at all, Arthur."
"I didn't know you were coming!"
"Take your time. Truly, we don't mind waiting." Joe scans the room just to see the state of it and if there are any baskets of crystals around like last time.
Yarrow closes the door behind you, and as you scan the room, it looks predominantly the same. Like, to the left is a kitchen area, to the right seems to be the experimentation area that he has, like the build area. And you look to find those, that yellow glow that you saw before, but it's not there. Around the corner from a different room comes Arthur wearing like a blue sweater vest and khaki chinos. You've now just visually seen the male version of Yarrow. Kind of like comes around, pulls on like a little overcoat type of situation to keep warm.
Hi guys. How's it going? It's been like 12 hours. I have not had enough time to look into the shit I said I would look into.
No, I mean, that's completely understandable. I actually more so want to pick your brain on what you already know.
Oh, all right. Can I get anybody some tea? I can heat up a kettle. Is that...
Yeah, tea. Tea would be great. Thank you.
Cool. Great. Yara, how do you feel? Whatever Joe wants, we'll take. And he darts off into the, again, open air. Like, you can see the kitchen. It's not hidden by, behind anything. Starts heating up some water to boil some tea. His house is not set up for company. So, like, you find a work chair. Or you find, like, the one chair under a lamp that's maybe made for late night reading. There's not a lot of space for people to, like, actually exist here. But in the meantime, as he boils the tea, you guys find two places to sit. And he finishes and he brings them over and hands them to you. What's happening now?
Well, first of all, how are you after last night? I know we all experienced something quite outside of our realm of experience. And I just, are you all right?
I'm all right. Sure. Joe, what do you hope to gain from asking me this?
Honestly, Arthur, I just hope to know that I can trust you and that you want to help us.
I did not show up on your doorstep. You all show up on mine. I'm not trying to hide anything, but a lot has happened, and there's a lot of grief to deal with. And so I would love if this was the last time you showed up without calling.
All right.
Sorry if that was blunt.
No, I prefer it. Always.
As I told Mama Amaretta, I want to help. That's not the case. Just in general. Thank you.
Joe straightens up and with, like, a slight glance to Yarrow, for all of her plans of flirting with him, manipulating him, when she sees the state that he is in this morning, she thinks that straightforwardness is the best course. Arthur, the last time I visited, you had many, many crystals in your house. More than I've ever seen in one place. And I'm sure they're here for scientific reasons. I don't doubt that of you. But how could I get you to lend some to me for testing?
Arthur immediately straightens up. I didn't know you noticed those were there. That I wasn't trying to hide them.
They were under a blanket, so it did seem like they were trying to be hidden.
They just glow a lot. It was like a nightlight. No, sorry. I gave them back to their owner.
And who's their owner?
Delia Weatherby. They were her mother's crystals, and I took them because I thought I could use them, but when she came around asking and had, you know, the family owns the rights to the things, I gave them back.
Of course, but you didn't keep any for yourself.
I, to this day, am very upset that I didn't. It was an oversight. I just really needed to make sure that Viola was happy, and I thought doing right by her kin would be what made that happen, and I was a little bit mistaken, I think.
Joe leans back in her chair and interlaces her fingers behind her head. It's a little bit of a crushing blow to her, to be honest. That was her major lead on where to get crystals for testing, to bring back to Mama, to move this case forward. But in that moment, she also decides that she does trust Arthur and is glad to have him on their side. And what are your feelings towards Delia?
She came to me with a legal document counting, you know, what she was owed from her mother's disappearance and death, and I don't know her very well. I gave her what I was legally obliged to give her.
Do you have her contact?
I have a Weatherby contact, if that helps. Not necessarily just for Delia.
Sure, I will see if it matches what we have for them. That would be great.
He gives you a phone number that you do recognize as the number that Rose gave you to contact her. You see that this whole time, Arthur is very forward, like, as in, like, giving the information you asked for, is not trying to hold anything back in that sense, but, like, isn't necessarily looking at you, answering your questions, just a little bit, like, askew of where your eyeline is at all times.
I think that Joe clocks that he's sort of avoiding her gaze, and she also notices that he has no problem looking at Yarrow. When Yarrow kind of automatically looks to her, they just lock eyes for a moment, and she, like, raises her eyebrows, like, your turn.
Arthur, is that all you have to tell us? I just want to make sure we've covered all of our bases. Yeah, yeah. That's all I have to share. I hope you guys find what you're looking for. Arthur, I know. You don't have to hide it. It's okay. I get it. I saw it. Oh, great. I don't want to talk about it. But, I don't want to be involved past research capabilities. I get that. No worries. I'm so sorry. I also don't often want to be involved past research capabilities, so we're on the same page on that. If there's anything you can tell us, here's my number specifically.
Right, well, this was all very illuminating. Arthur, I do genuinely thank you for your time, and I promise never to show up without calling.
Joe, you're fine. Truly. I want to help. I want to... Ever since I lost my mentor, I don't really know what I'm doing. So, anybody who's willing to offer some sort of reprieve and audience, I would like to help.
Arthur, are you, even just academically, well-versed in runes?
It's kind of my specialty, sure.
Joe stands up and pulls some out of one of her many pockets and kind of shuffles through. Finds one that stumped her in particular and hands it to him.
He looks at it and immediately his eyes go wide and he says, I can't give you a direct translation of this, but this is... Swallows very hard. This is Viola's direct personal cipher.
And this one?
It's the same. I recognize the runes. I can't translate immediately, but I do. I recognize the runes.
And do you have a way?
Possibly. It would take me a little bit, but.
But now?
I wasn't allowed to know this.
I'm sorry. It's simply. I think that if we can get this translated, it could sort of unravel this whole thing.
I can't do it on command, but. I could try to figure out the cipher here and the code, and there's like a small smile that comes across his face. I never thought I would hear from her again, and then maybe now I will.
Joe goes over to Yarrow and is like, Papers, do you have anything else that we should show him, leave with him?
I will leave a couple things. I am not certain that I should leave everything with someone who is so devoted.
Good call. Smart girl.
This series stars Kenzie Tartaglioni as the Game Master, Atlas Matthews as J.J. August, Danielle Halen as Mama Amaretta, and April Consolo as Joanna Gilmore, with Michelle Kelly performing our episode recaps. You can help us out by listening and sharing, rating and reviewing, or coming over to our Discord. Also, you can join our Patreon to get access to our episode talkbacks and more. Thanks for listening.